How are you doing today, Redneck?
Not too bad. How about yourself today, Pastor?
I'm doing well. We had a great Sunday in church. Got to spend a lot of time with my family. Got to spend some time with the congregation, which was great. We always do the thing where afterwards everyone kind of stands around and talks, and everybody wants to talk to the pastor for a couple of moments. Just to let us know what's going on, and we appreciate that. And we like know what's going on with everybody just because it's nice when people want us to pray for them. It's nice to know what to pray for. So,
yeah, definitely. I've kind of had a relaxing day. Our church that my wife and I normally attend is still doing online because it's a larger church, and that we just,
yeah,
it's not really easy to do a in person. So we're still doing online. So I got up and I watched our service this morning, and then I just kind of bummed around the house, and I ran up to Hy-Vee, and I'm gonna make some sliders for supper tonight. I'm gonna do some White Castle style sliders. No. I know you don't like them because of the onions, but
it's not only the onions. Like, I've been in vans with a group of gentlemen who've decided to eat White Castle right before a road trip or on the way back from a road trip, and let me tell you, that does not the van doesn't smell good by the time you get to your destination. Okay, it just doesn't.
Not whatsoever, that's for sure.
I mean, oh, man. It's bad. In case you're ever wondering if you should do it, the answer is no.
Just don't. It's not a good idea. Even if you think you should eat White Castle and then drive down the road, it's probably not a good idea. Yeah. If you have to go longer than maybe 20 or 30 minutes.
Yeah. If you have to, no. If you know the right place, in my opinion, for White Castle? In the trash can.
No.
Before you get in your car.
Man, no, it's delicious.
No. I disagree on a lot of reasons. Although, you know, the youngest of us boys has a special connection with White Castle, but we won't go into that. We won't call them out too much.
You know, it's one of those things that it sounded good, and we wanted burgers, and we had the stuff, so I was going to do it anyways. Yeah, although, you know, I do have to say with us doing everything that, you know, we did miss a week here in between everything, and we did have some technical difficulties, so I do have to apologize to everybody out there, but hopefully our quality should be getting better here, because I did just get a bunch of upgraded stuff here so we can get better audio quality. I can get better, a better computer and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully we can just go up from here.
Yeah. I mean, we're excited for that. We're trying to do a little bit better. Not that this is ever going to be like a great quality, because it's doubtful that we'll be in the same place very often outside of maybe the family get togethers.
Right. But,
you know, we're going to do our best with what we have, and we're going to keep trying to do this and bring you guys some news, and albeit maybe some delayed news this week. But I know we have some current events up here as well. So it'll be fine. You know, we'll just call it our Christmas break. You know, we just started off and
needed definitely
a break already. So
exactly.
So I have to ask, because it's been since a little before Christmas since we put out an episode. Get anything interesting for Christmas, Redneck?
I mean, I did get a laugh out loud joke calendar here.
Oh.
I'm gonna give you a joke of the day here to start it off.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the first one. Okay. Why did the stereo blow up?
I don't know.
It was radioactive.
Oh my god! Wow, I'm now looking forward to those jokes of the day. I expect those now. Okay, that was good. That was very good.
Yep, my in-laws got me one of those calendars here, so I've got it here on the desk, so that when I'm here at the desk doing different things, and then I got a nice like flannel kind of shirt, and I got some new earbuds too. So got some Samsung Galaxy Buds, and
nice.
Yeah. How about yourself? Did you get anything?
I did. You know, I'm a huge coffee person. I love coffee. Everything about coffee, the taste, the smell, the just even just the feel of coffee beans in my hand, I love. But I got a French press from my in-laws, which was awesome. I love me some French press coffee.
Oh yeah.
I have several different coffee makers, and a few of the people who've come over to our house have been like, why do you have so many different types of coffee pots? And I'm like, because they make different types of coffee, you know?
Right.
I have a cold brew, which it's self-explanatory. That's not like a French press. I have, you know, the just the traditional coffee pot. I have one that like a little espresso maker. But anyway, so I got that. And then my wife got me coffee from this place. It's called Bones Coffee. It's fantastic. They have so many different flavors. They're definitely not a sponsor, but if they ever wanted to be, gladly accept them because their coffee is amazing. Let me tell you.
Any coffee company wants to ever sponsor us, we're more than willing to take it.
Right. I will shamelessly plug coffee as long as it's good. Like I wouldn't want to shamelessly plug a coffee that's not good.
Right.
But no, they had different kinds of coffee. So one was eggnog, one was white chocolate peppermint bark, one was like a coconut caramel vanilla, I think. And there are two more, and they're escaping me right now. But so far, all of them that I've tried have been amazing. One of my favorites that they have there is peanut butter jelly, though. It is so good.
Ooh. Yeah, I remember you having me try that one time, and that was really, really,
it's really good. It's also a little conflicting because you're like, am I drinking coffee or eating grape jelly? You know.
Oh, but you know the thing is if you can mash two things like that together,
it's so good.
Just, it's heavenly. Like,
yeah, they also have a s'mores one, which is anyway. I can go on for coffee for a long time. So, I have to ask: did we get anything wrong last time that you remember?
Not that I can think of. Not that I remember or had written down.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything either when I was listening back. But, you know, if we miss something, shoot us an email at redneckpastorpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what we missed. Let us know what we forgot, because I'm sure there was something wrong in there. But you know,
right, yeah.
Like we said, we're just trying to do our best to get all this stuff right. But this is really more about our opinions than it is about facts. So.
Definitely. That's for sure. Oh man.
We'll go ahead and hop right into one of these things here. The first story I had today, kind of a sad one, ended up happening about a week ago on January 3rd. And it's in Texas. There's a young man. Police identified this gentleman, a 20-year-old man, a 21-year-old young man, ended up shooting up a church in Texas. And he ended up killing a pastor and injuring, I believe, two other people, if I'm reading this story correctly. The gentleman was caught. And I'm not going to say the guy's name because that's just giving him...
Yeah, you don't want his name to live in infamy. The less we can give him the clout and infamy that he wants, the better.
Exactly. So I guess he was caught after a high-speed chase of like 100 miles an hour through this town. Pretty much from what the story reads, this guy went into the church. I'm going to paraphrase this for a second here, but the guy went into the church, pretty much was going to attack to get, I assume, the offering or some kind of money. The pastor ended up pulling his concealed carry, and the guy knocked the pastor's concealed carry, took his concealed carry, ended up shooting the pastor and the two other people who got injured during this. This makes me so sad for so many reasons. And it's more than just this guy as a pastor. You know, like it or not, like pastors have a right to conceal carry. I know a lot of pastors who conceal carry for this fact, the fact that every Sunday we have offerings every Sunday. Now, is it right to conceal carry? I don't know. At no matter where you are, going into a church, shooting up a church that collects someone's offering, I can't imagine. Now, it doesn't say the size of the church in here. It doesn't say how much the guy really made off with. If it's anything like my church, he made off with some checks and a few dollars. I mean, I have a small congregation, but here's the thing, like, That could, for some churches, that could be the difference between them making it through the month and them not. And these people are giving to the church probably to help people, to help the church keep the lights on so they can continue to worship there. These people are giving to the church for the biblical mandate. And this guy has the nerve to come in and take this money, or to come in and try and take something from the church that doesn't belong to him. And this applies to everything. Like, don't go in somewhere and take something that doesn't belong to you. Don't go in somewhere and take people's money. It doesn't matter if you come in unarmed and you ended up with a gun because the pastor had a concealed carry weapon with him. That doesn't matter. That's besides the fact. The pastor, in this defense, in my opinion, was defending himself. And I don't think you can get into the, we can get into the gun concealed carry stuff in a couple of seconds here, but I just don't think that the concealed carry has much to do with this story. In my opinion, if you're going to pull in the concealed carry, honestly, the pastor is trying to defend himself. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman ended up taking his concealed carry and injuring the pastor, injuring two others, or killing the pastor and injuring two others.
Yeah. So there's a couple of different things that I can see that people would have an issue with the concealed carry side of things. Not necessarily the fact that he was carrying. My problem is as somebody who has a concealed carry, you are somebody who has the responsibility that if you are drawing your gun, that is your last line of defense. Mm-hmm. If you're drawing your gun, you should be firing your gun. That should For be sure. it. The thing is if he felt it necessary to draw his weapon at that point, he should have finished off what he started and stopped the situation. I know sometimes it's a rock and a hard place because as a pastor, you don't want to take that life. You don't want to harm somebody. Mm-hmm. But if it comes to protecting your congregation and, you know, Satan is using this as a tool and you have this tool to stop this attack, do it.
That is, I understand where you're coming from with that, but let me just say that, with that said, let me read just a little bit of this article, and this is from CNN.
Okay.
We believe what happened this morning is a suspect backtracked his way after deputies left the area and came back in an order to get out of the cold and enter a broken window and entered the church. Smith said Sunday he was still in the bathroom of the church with the door closed when the pastor and his wife, pastor or his wife, opened the door and met with him. So I was incorrect. He wasn't in there to steal. Okay. He was in there to hide from the police because he was running. So now that to me, this guy was already unhinged. Now I'd like to say that I apologize for the incorrect information. I just assumed since he was breaking into the church, he was trying to steal like the offering or steal something. He was trying to hide from police, I guess. But either way, it doesn't make it right. It doesn't make the fact that he ended up killing somebody okay. What I'm saying though is that yes, if you pull your gun, you need to be ready to pull the trigger because in all reality, exactly what we were taught growing up, what everyone has taught us, if you're aiming your gun at something, well, no matter what kind of gun it is, you need to be ready to kill that object, right?
Yep.
Whether it's inanimate, whether you're hunting, if you're aiming your gun at something, you're getting ready to kill it.
Exactly.
Period. With that said, this story just makes me sad because whether he was hiding from the police, whether he was whatever, this guy was, especially if this guy was hiding from the police, he was probably unhinged. He was, especially if he's hiding in the bathroom. Like, imagine that. Like, you'd be just a little goofy. Imagine walking in thinking you're going to the bathroom and there's a guy waiting in there because he jumped in through the broken window, you know?
Right.
I'd be scared a little bit too.
I mean, yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if what exactly happened. My understanding is that he opened the door. There was confusion during the time. From what exactly what this article is saying, the pastor got distracted talking to his wife while he was trying to apprehend this guy, and the suspect lunged at him and was able to take the firearm out of his hand. So he had pretty much subdued the guy, and then he lunged and took it out of his hand. So this guy was unhinged.
Yeah, he was. So he was already at the point of running from the police. So you don't know what state of mind he was in. Yeah. You don't know. He was in that fight or flight mode anyways, because he was trying to run. And so the thing is like, it's a sad situation because it was a pastor that was shot in his church, and it was at a church. And you know, the thing is this is supposed to be a house of worship, and for somebody to come in and be this crazy and unhinged in there, it's just, I mean, but you know, unfortunately, you don't know the frame of mind that the gentleman who was running from the cops was in or any of that. So it's one of those things that it's just a terrible situation all around.
Oh yeah, it's an awful situation. And I mean, we can get into some of the gun control issues and say, well, if the pastor hadn't had a gun, then maybe he wouldn't have lost his life. You can get down to that. But ultimately it comes down to is, you know, the old, what is it? Whatever.
Oh yeah.
Like, you can't, I don't know the saying. I should know it, but.
And the thing is hindsight is always 20/20. You can't, sure. You know, you can't be judging it now and saying, well, if, and, mm-hmm. Well, but the thing is those if and ands don't change the fact that somebody was shot, and you know,
yeah,
it's just not right. It's not going to change that.
Exactly. It's not going to change that this guy was off his rocker and decided that he was going to try and hide from police church. Doesn't change the fact that this pastor ended up losing his life because, whether it be because he got distracted and went to talk to his wife, whether it be because this guy was crazy and lunged at him and took his firearm, mm-hmm. doesn't matter. This pastor ended up losing his life. It's not about gun control. It's not about this. It's about mourning this family's life.
Yep.
My heart breaks out. My heart breaks for this pastor, for this congregation mm-hmm. that lost their pastor, his family. My heart breaks for all of them. They're in my prayers. That's the only place I can leave that. Like,
definitely. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, yeah, our thoughts and prayers go out to them for sure. And then, you know, in everything, that they can just be comforted, knowing that as a pastor, that he's at least with his Heavenly Father, you know, that's at least they right. can be comforted by that.
For sure. And that's, I think, where we have to leave that one.
Yep.
And we pray for that family, and we hope that, we know the grief is going to be hard, but
yeah,
we hope that during these times that you can take some comfort knowing, you know, he's with his Heavenly Father. Next one I have is a little more COVID news, because, you know, we haven't talked about that enough, but
right.
This next thing comes from the Washington Post, and it's actually an opinion section. So it fits right into us. There's no facts. There's nothing with this one. It is all opinion. And this person's opinion on the Washington Post, let me get a name for you here. It's Robert M. Watcher and Anish K. Jaha. I'm sorry if I mispronounce those. You guys are probably a lot smarter than I am, because one is the chair of the Department of Medicine at the University of California in San Francisco, and the other is the dean of Brown University School of Public Health. So both much smarter than I am. And I'm going to bring this down to just a few points that we've kind of talked about before and kind of give you what their opinion is. So we've talked about in the past how the COVID-19 vaccine is behind schedule, right? There's not enough supply there to meet the demand. And that supplies are hard to get for these, the supplies are harder to get for these companies to manufacture these. So what these two are suggesting from those two facts, and that this is a 95% effective thing, but we also know that within the COVID vaccine, you have to have two doses. So what they're asking is, are we really wanting to hold both doses for one person, or do we want to essentially vaccinate as many people with one vaccine to start and then pretty much have to start over the vaccines at a later date? I'm gonna let you answer that before I talk much more.
So essentially what they're trying to say is whether or not we should vaccinate as many people as possible with one dose, and then hopefully they can produce enough vaccines by in time to get their second dose in within the time frame of the 2 weeks, or are they looking at having to restart the whole vaccination process?
No, so I think what they're saying here, I don't know necessarily that they'll have to restart, but this is saying with one dose, they're showing results are that it's, excuse me, they're showing that with only one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, it's 80 to 90% effective in preventing COVID-19 cases. So with one dose. Okay. So they're saying, is it better that if we just give everybody who would need it one dose instead of holding out for everybody to get two doses? So for instance, like 600,000, you know, 20,000 vaccines for South Dakota, you would only need 1.2 million for South Dakota, you would only need 600,000. And if those populations are wrong, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, the thing is it's kind of a, I don't know. The thing is what the survivability rate of COVID, and if you look at the herd immunity factor in there, it's kind of a catch 22, because the thing is you could do it one way or the other, but who knows? I don't know. The problem is this is such a new virus that we just don't know enough about a lot of it. I mean, we're getting to know more and more, and we know the sequencing and all of that kind of stuff. They know the way that it splices with the RNA and all of that.
Right.
And the thing is I just, I don't know. That's a hard one. Like I see where what they're trying to say. It's just so,
Yeah, so pretty much, and I'm just going to read this directly from their article here. And it says this: we're not arguing against people receiving two shots. The second shot adds a measure of effectiveness and likely makes vaccine-derived immunity more durable. That's why we're advocating that it be delayed, not dropped altogether. An argument can be made that for groups at higher risk for exposure, such as healthcare workers, and for death, such as Americans over age 75, sticking with the early second shot strategy is reasonable. But for everybody else, the deferral strategy makes sense. So pretty much what they're saying is that let's get as many people the first shot as possible. Then for the second shot, focus on focus on getting the healthcare workers and the first responders, all of them, their first two shots, boom, boom, boom. Then get everybody one shot, and then get everybody the second shot when we have the supplies and they're ready vaccines.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see what they're saying. And if the thing is if it's 80 to 90% effective anyways, why would it not make sense to do it that way? I mean, honestly, and with the survivability rate, anyways, if you're not in that vulnerable category where you're immune deficient or you're above that age of, like, I think it's 75 is what they say now, and up, if you're not in those vulnerable categories, the survivability rate, not that, you know, weird things can't happen, everybody's body is unique and individual, but the survivability rate is like over 90%. It's like 98 or 99% almost, as far as the survivability rate. So if we got, if one of those people who want to get the vaccine right away, it would make sense to do the single dose. And then after you do the single dose to, then wait and prolong it until we have the, supplies to do the next dose.
Yeah, and I understand where you're coming from. I think this is an interesting point, and I think they make some really good points here. It'd be interesting to see if that's correct data. I think that's just kind of what they're ballparking, is that it's an estimate. This would be this effective.
Right.
I don't think they're talking long-term it'd be this effective, but they're saying in the short term, while we're vaccinating everybody, then we're going to have, you know, only 20% of the population that's really even vulnerable to catching it, which would be an interesting feat nonetheless. I think one of the big things here, though, is that if you do this and that it doesn't end up being the case, like, have you just kind of undone something or given people unnecessary shots? So, like, kind of like we talked last time with the Husky Husker, who's not with us today, you know, he has bad reactions to shots at times.
Right.
But with him, like, did you give him a shot that he didn't have to have and gave him an extra – essentially gave him an extra dose because now he's gonna have to come back and take two more? I think that's things I'd have to look into before they go, yeah, this is a great idea to do this. I think it, I mean, if it's really 80-90% effective, if I remember right, that's more effective than the flu shot.
Well, I mean, with the flu shot, the thing is if it's the problem right now is not enough people get the flu shot for it to be that effective. You know, the thing is the flu shot, is one of, you know, if it was more widely taken, it would be more effective. The problem is I can probably tell you out of my circle of people around me, how many people have actually gotten the flu shot, and it's not that many.
Right. So on the CDC's website, now this is just, again, from the first search on Google, right? If you could dive deeper, I'm sure there's more technical things that go into this. But just from the first search on Google, saying 2019-2020 increased from the previous season to nearly 52% effective. So my question is that 52% effective of the people who took it, or just overall this flu shot was 52% effective from preventing the flu? Like, I don't know how they would measure that. My guess is it's 52% of the people who took it. So you're talking, that's 52% the COVID vaccine with the one shot, they're saying could be up to 80-90% effective. That's a huge difference. You're talking hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely a lot more effective. I mean, like I said, but the problem also becomes with vaccines is you also have to put in some of the fact that naturally, as a more social being, we do develop herd immunity to some of these viruses and stuff, and our bodies do that. So we do also have some of our just natural everyday, you know, ability as what God has created in us that helps with some of this.
We do, but a lot of studies are saying that herd immunity isn't necessarily something you can just claim with this virus, because the issue with the virus is that when you look at it, so a lot of the doctors now are saying the antibodies live in your system for up to 90 days after you have the COVID vaccine virus. So essentially you would have to hope that everyone, at least in your social group, would get exposed to the virus somehow, hopefully not deathly ill or whatever, would get exposed to the virus within the same 90 days, start on the same 90 days, and then nobody would have it after that, right? So now you have the antibodies, you all have it, the virus is gone, yippity-doo-dah. The issue is that hypothetically, That all happens for my social group. I'm now at 120 days. I come to visit the redneck. He gives me coronavirus. I now bring it back to my social group. Everybody has to start over.
Right. Well, and that's unfortunately with our society, as mobile as it is, that's what makes this kind of a virus so much worse. Yeah. Than, because like if you look historically at the Spanish flu in 1911-1912 time frame, the thing is you know, the Spanish flu didn't travel nearly as much, but they didn't have planes that were flying, you know, constantly. They didn't have, you know, the ship travel that we have now. They didn't have the automobile travel.
Right.
They didn't have all of that. You know, it was horse and buggy and big wooden boats.
Right. Right. No one would have thought in 1912 that you could travel from, if you're driving straight through.
Oh, hold on.
No.
Oh. Hold on. It stopped.
But.
Okay. Sorry. It's still recording. We can cut that spot out.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay.
So just
all right, I'll put a nice little
Oh, I was gonna say we can just cut that spot out. Go ahead. You were saying nobody knew in 1912 was the last thing I heard. So
nobody knew in 1912 that they would be able to travel from New York to California in a matter of 2 days by car, or even just a matter of a few hours by plane. Like, nobody thought that would be possible in 1912. So our society has become so much more mobile. And even at that, I think we've not necessarily become more social, because there have been studies that show, you know, we're becoming, as social media becomes new things, we're becoming less social and more internet driven, whatever. I can't speak to that. I like talking to people. I like being around people. If I didn't, I wouldn't do what I do. But the reality of the situation is that the more we're around people, even for work, even for, you know, just getting together to tweet at each other. I don't know what kids do these days. I'm old. Give me a break. The tiki tacks and the TikToks and the Twitters and the Snapchats. I don't know what's going on with these kids these days.
Yeah.
Anyway, but even getting together just to sit on your phones, being in the same room poses an issue right now. So it's this virus has just been weird. I'm hoping this vaccine works well and that we can go back to living, not necessarily before how everything was, because I also think we'd be ignorant not to at least make some changes in our lives, right? I'm not saying that masks need to be a part of our lives. What I'm saying is that maybe with the first part of this, when we're all learning to slow down and be more intentional with our families, to slow down and spend that time that we don't know if we have tomorrow, is what we need to take from this. And we need to live our lives like today could be our last day. We need to live our lives like tomorrow is going to be, you know, the day that we need to say we love our families. We need to spend intentional time with our families. And I think that's what this comes down to.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that. And the other thing I can point out is, like, I can see after we get to a more sense of what you want to call air quote normal. The thing is I can see as we get closer to that maybe some of these bigger businesses, and for these people who are more into like wanting to protect the environment and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we shouldn't protect the environment, but I'm not a big kind of tree hugger kind of person. Not that that's, you know, necessarily political correct, but I'm a redneck, so we'll go there. I like to hug trees, but I just like to hug them to climb up to shoot the deer. Oh, man. Yeah, you know, the thing is some of these bigger office buildings that these companies have, these giant corporations downtown, will see maybe we don't need everybody to come in every day and drive in their car. Maybe we only need them to come in on Monday and Friday. The rest of the week they can work from home. And this way you're not spreading these diseases around as much, like the colds and the flus and the stuff. And you're also taking the time so that A, they can wake up, roll out of bed, go to their computer in their home office, do their work, get it done, be home, or be able to drive and go pick up their kids from school and stuff once that kind of starts to be a normal thing. And then you're able to be able to have a little more time with your families because you're not having these commutes between these office buildings and home and, you know, all of that. And especially once we can get to a little bit more sense of normalcy and start sending the kids back to school and start getting some of that, because I do believe that the kids need to be together and socializing and stuff like that. And I do believe that that's a very important thing of development for our younger children.
Yeah. And I think even to a certain degree, people are agreeing with that now, like the kids are kind of back in school and they're just taking precautions and stuff, you know, but, or at least in Illinois, they're back in school. Well, some places they are, some places they aren't. Depends on where you live in Illinois. But what I think, there's a lot of companies, what I was going to say is there's a lot of companies that actually are realizing that, hey, actually, you know what? Our employees can successfully work from home. So corporations are starting to see this, that it's cheaper for them, for their employees to work from home because they're not having to pay, they don't want to pay the leases and the maintenance on these buildings anymore. So ultimately there might be some good things that are coming out of this. I personally, I like having an office to go into, so maybe that's not for everybody, but in all honesty, I think this could be some good that's come out of it. I think corporations are finally able to start saving some money, and businesses will start, I think, kind of adopt that as the, like a practice. So with not having these extra leases, having these, you know, I think of, you know, like these banks that have like multiple branches and now some of their employees are working from home. They're starting to see that, hey, we can save money by not necessarily having our lobby open all the time, but directing people to our drive-through and only taking appointments for our lobby. Cause now we don't have to pay three people, you know, which is also a part of the downside. But anyway, all that to say, that I think there are some positive things that can come out of it, whether it be saving money as a business, whether it be learning to slow down and just take time for our families, whether it be that you get to take time and just work from home. All those can be positive things. I think we just have to look for them. I know no matter what, COVID's a bad situation.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. Moment, so. That's, you know, it's one of those things that hopefully we can get, some of these businesses can get their hybridization that they want going, and they're able to have, you know, the best of both worlds. This way they can, you know, be able to accommodate everything that might happen.
For sure. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So, well, I know that kind of wraps up the stories we had for you.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and get into the first story I have here. And that's that the U.S. is suing Walmart, accusing it of fueling the opioid crisis. So that is the United States, as far as the Justice Department, is suing Walmart. And this was on December 22nd of 2020 is when I saw this article. So it is a little bit...
it's a little dated. There might be some updates for next week.
Right, yeah. But this kind of gives us the base of what it's talking about. And then it's accusing because... it is inadequately screening thousands of prescriptions that were dubious prescriptions and ignored repeated warnings from the its own pharmacist. So Walmart had pharmacists in its company that were warning of these prescriptions and stuff that they were seeing, and they were knowingly not doing it, and knowingly. And it says in this article, and this is from NBC News, that Walmart knowingly violated well-established rules requiring it to scrutinize controlled substance prescriptions to ensure that they were valid, and required pharmacists to process a high volume of prescriptions as fast as possible. And by doing so, Walmart profited by providing its pharmacies with unusually large quantities of controlled substances to sell, and from other and from selling other products to customers who came to Walmart stores only because Walmart pharmacies would readily provide these controlled substances, according to the federal complaint.
So you used to work for Walmart at one point in your life, right?
Yes.
My question for you is, do you think it's because they just don't have the scrutinize? Because Walmart's all about like cutting costs, saving money, and making the dollar, right? I think it's just because they don't have the proper staff on to do it. Do you think there's like a deeper reason? Do you think this is just Walmart cut corners? What do you think it is?
You know, honestly, I can see from the time frame that I worked there, the problem is they have such a high turnover rate at a store like that, because it's such a giant corporation, and they can have the mentality of, if I get rid of you, there's 10 more of you in line behind you to take your position.
For sure.
And unfortunately, with it being such a large retail giant like that, I think a lot of these things get overlooked, because when you get to such a large bureaucracy, kind of a corporation where everything has to move down through these large channels, and it gets gummed up in the works. And the thing is I could definitely see something being easily overlooked with a company like this.
And
the thing is it's such a dangerous issue, is because it's feeding into the overdose issue that we have in our country right now, because opioids right now are one of the biggest issues for overdoses. Opioids and fentanyl, because fentanyl is being mixed with a lot of different drugs such as heroin and cocaine and a lot of these other things coming in. Because the thing is with fentanyl, you don't measure it in milligrams like you do most other drugs. You measure it in micrograms. And just right around a microgram can kill a human adult.
Oh my goodness.
And so the thing is if this is mixed too strong and some of this other stuff, it can, that's why some of these people are just ODing on some of this stuff like it's nothing. And that's why, you know, they've had to pass out Narcan so much. And the thing is if large corporations like this are just taking these prescriptions and not double checking and making sure, I believe that they should be held responsible, because they're fueling the overdose crisis that's happening in our country.
I don't know. So I go back and forth here, right? So is it Walmart or is it local pharmacists? I'd be curious to see if this is something that they can trace back to like one store. Is this something that they see just kind of like overall their stores? Is that what they're talking about? Or is it more like local, like more regional kind of thing? I'm just kind of curious as to those few things, because I think that makes it different as well, right? So for instance, if this is the issue, like let's say you live in Iowa. So let's say the city you live in, that it's an issue there, right? But it's not an issue for Walmart where I'm living. Is it really a company-wide issue, or is it more of a localized store issue, and they need to be checking out like those employees and that manager? I don't get me wrong. I think this is something that's terrible. Like Walmart should be double checking those things, and if the government's suing them because of it, my guess is it's more of a company-wide issue than just a localized issue. But
Yeah, so this article is saying that it's more, so Walmart operates more than 5,000 pharmacies nationwide. And the thing is they're saying in this article that it definitely looks like it's a company-wide thing, just because the problem is it's over the last, and it looks like Walmart's not even the only one who is kind of had these charges brought against them. It says over the last several years, Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid had faced several lawsuits across the country, similarly alleging that they have aggressively sought to bolster their revenue, increase profits, and grow their share of the prescription painkiller market by unlawfully and surreptitiously increasing the volume of opioids they sold, according to the complaint filed in, it was an Ohio federal court, was that one, and that was several years ago. Over the last several years, all of those have suits brought against
I was gonna say, it seems like Walgreens and at least CVS would be part of this as well, because they're big, you know, they're big pharmacies as well. That's interesting though, because I would not think that, like, these, especially like CVS and Walgreens, you would think like their main thing is to be a drugstore, right?
Right.
It's to be a pharmacy. So it's one of those things that is interesting. You think if anybody, they would be the ones where they need to slow down. What do you think the solution is to this though? I think that's really what the question is. Like, how do you solve the issue?
Well, you know, the thing is I am very pro alternative medicine. I think that our problem in our country is big pharma lobbies to our Congress and our representatives too much, and gets too much in the pockets of our government, and is allowed to run rampant like this. The thing is these drugs are, you know, addictive. You can overdose. People can ruin their lives with these drugs. And these are legal drugs. Mm-hmm. They are buying them from a pharmacy. And the thing is I think if we can get our country to look at other alternatives, you know, and I'm not saying necessarily, you know, I myself, the redneck, am very pro 420, if you want to call it that, pro marijuana, you know, but that's me, that's my personal feelings. I think that if we had more medical research into that, we could get rid of a lot of these kind of things, and I think I believe in the healing powers of those, but that's because I believe that that's a plant that God gave us to use, and there's pathways in our body for that. But I'm not saying that that's for everybody. Everybody has to think that way. That's the way I think. And the thing is what I think though, however, and I believe that if we can get off of these pharmaceutical grade painkillers and start finding more natural ways to do it, you know, for instance, chiropractics is a beautiful thing that, you know, I'd never been to a chiropractor up until recently, and I was having some lower back issues and hip issues and, you know, some sciatic nerve pain. And I went to the chiropractor and got cracked and popped and, you know, adjusted, and holy cow. Yep, exactly. It sounded like a bag of Rice Krispies and milk.
Yeah. No, they do some awesome work. I will say that. Chiropractors, you are the most underrated doctors of all. People swear by dentists. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to go to the dentist, guys, first of all. And people, you know, we'll go to their doctor if their tummy hurts. But man, let me tell you, chiropractors don't get enough credit. Mm-hmm. I've got to find one here.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is I think if we can just as a society not think that, oh, my left knee hurts just a little bit, I got to go get something for it, I got to get a painkiller for it, like, I understand the miracle of modern medicine. We have the ability to help heal our bodies and aid our bodies, but I don't think that we should put so much into our bodies that we are hurting our bodies.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say something that I think you're going to hate. And I think I have a way of monitoring this at least better. I don't think all pharmacies should be allowed to hold these super controlled substances. I almost, and I don't know if I'd necessarily go this far, but it's almost to the point of where you almost want to go and say, okay, Walgreens in my town is the only place in town. And I'm just using that example because, you know, it's the only place in town that has these pain medicines. If you are getting these pain medicines, you have to go to Walgreens. So then if there's an issue with these pain medicines, you can look straight to Walgreens and say, how are these getting out? Right. And if all the prescriptions are legal, all the prescriptions are there or correct, and they followed up with them and everything, then all right, clearly somebody who's gotten a prescription is, you know, doing whatever with their prescription. And I'm not necessarily saying Walgreens, maybe make it a local shop, maybe make it, you know.
Yeah. You know, I could also see, I see kind of what you're pointing out is to make somebody more pointedly, responsible for what's going on.
Right. Or and, maybe even just, that's not something the pharmacies can give you. Maybe it's, you have to go to your doctor. Doctor has to give you this controlled medicine. And maybe that's what it needs to come down to.
Well, and I also think that maybe at that point, I know a lot of doctor's offices that have pharmacies directly inside of them.
Yeah.
Could that not be a thing that, this doctor's office might not have a pharmacy, but they work in network with X, Y, and Z doctors, yeah. And here's your prescription. They know this pharmacy knows my signature as this prescribing doctor. Right. I'm sending you here, and I know that they will responsibly give you the medication that I am prescribing you. Right. Not that you are going to be able to just, you know, fill out this paperwork, give it to somebody, and then be able to
get the medicine,
and then go sell it on the street or whatever you're planning on doing with it.
I will say, I don't think this is going to be much of an issue anymore for too long. And I say that because a lot of pharmacies now are going direct from doctor to pharmacy. So when I go to my doctor, instead of them giving me a little piece of paper like they used to, you know, and me have to take it there and then, you know, then filling up and following up, mm-hmm. my doctor just sends it right to my pharmacy.
And you know,
they call it in, they email it in or whatever they do. I think that's probably more the way we're going. And I think that's where most people need to go. And I know you have to have more staff. I know you have to have all that, but honestly, to monitor these controlled substances, to save multiple people's lives, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. The thing is, you know, it just has to be a little more accountability. And the problem is some of these large corporations just don't have the ability to have the accountability for drugs like this.
Right. Cause it comes down to the bottom dollar.
Exactly. That's the problem there's no way that they can have their eye on those kind of things so much, you know, because, you know, there's how many millions of people in the United States?
30.
30 million people. Okay.
I believe anyway.
Yeah. So roughly, and you're just talking that's a huge, huge sector that of
people. Excuse me. 328. I was way off.
Holy cow. Yeah, you were way off. So 328 million. Okay. So maybe 30 million of those are on pain pills, but that's still a huge number. And the problem is that's not including the people who are illegally taking those pain pills and getting hooked on them.
Right. Right. For sure. It's a huge issue. If you have problems, get help.
Yes, exactly. You know, the thing is just seeing, you know, personally, and I know you've seen it well with our family around us, mm-hmm. you know, just the drugs are a terrible thing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Especially those drugs that are the addictive, life altering, like I said, I'm all for alternative medicine and helping your body as much as you can to do the things that, you know,
where it's legal.
Yes. Oh yeah. Within legal realms, you know.
right.
But the thing is I also don't think that, you know, some of these drugs are something that you really want to mess with. I mean, if you really want to, I'm not for telling you how to live your life, you know, but the problem is just please, I ask you that if you get in a situation where you're struggling and addicted and need, just reach out for help. Like, please.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And, you know, I will say this to kind of end it. I'm not against these prescription medicines by any means. I'm not nearly as into the natural remedies as you are. I do think chiropractic is great if you have, like, you know, body aches or different things like that. I think there are different places we've been taught. You've been hinting towards marijuana. I think there are definitely places for marijuana research, and that can definitely help people. There have been scientific studies that show certain parts of CBD can help. And, you know, look, I'm all for researching to that and having that be a cure for things that it can help with. But if a doctor is going to prescribe me something, I'm going to assume that that doctor who's had 8 years of at least 8 years plus their residency, plus, you know, all their extra stuff that goes internship, residency, what, however that works. I'm clearly not a doctor. They've had so many years of school. I'm going to assume they know better than I do. And I'm going to take it. But once I start feeling better, I'm not going to. So, for instance, if I go to the doctor because I broke my foot in three different places and they prescribe me Vicodin, I'm going to take the Vicodin. I don't know if they would prescribe that for that. But anyway, I'm going to take it and I'm not going to abuse it. I'm going to take it as prescribed. And I think your point is that if you get to the spot where you're no longer taking it as prescribed, get help.
Exactly.
Search for other things if you're not comfortable taking it, if you don't think you can handle it.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. That's, you know, it's one of those things that I hope that this whole lawsuit will bring at least a little bit more accountability to some of these companies and that it'll help curtail some of the issues of these drugs getting out onto our streets and running rampant.
Yeah, I agree with that.
100%. So the next one, a little more up to date here. This is everybody's front page news right now. It's you know, the Capitol Hill protest, the Capitol Hill whatever you want to call it,
riot.
See, okay,
looting, whatever it is.
Yep. Okay. So the only thing that I'm going to say with that is there were aspects of it, yes, that were riotous. There were aspects of people who did not partake in the riot. Yes.
Yeah.
And those people were protesters. Those people who remained peaceful were protesters.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus,
just like in anything else that has happened in recent news in our country, you know, whether it be any of these other protests, these people burning down and looting, that's rioting. These people who are peacefully out there just trying to spread their message, that's protesting.
I agree. And, I don't disagree. Yep. I will say those who stormed the Capitol were rioting.
Yes, agree. So my thing is I just wanted, before we dig into this, I want to make that distinction that I'm not one of those people who are saying that all of these people were rioting and that there was no peaceful protesters, but I'm also saying that in recent history, there was also riots that went on and there was peaceful protests.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and
for sure. I mean, you look in, sorry, go ahead. I'll let you tell your story.
You know, so with this, it was on the, oh man, what day did that happen? That was on the 6th.
Yeah, I think it would have been Wednesday.
Wednesday, yep. So that was January 6th that they there was peaceful, mostly peaceful protests that were supposed to be happening. And unfortunately, individuals who were pro-Trump supporters were climbing over the wall and did breach the Capitol building. In breaching the Capitol building, they did force the House of Representatives and the senators to have to seek shelter in the bunkers underneath. And they did, you know, cause a lot of havoc. And that, you know, my thing is in the, I've been listening to a lot of different people's takes on this thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the best ways I've heard this put, in the last 200 years of our country, there have been plenty of reasons for us as a citizenry to storm the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Trying to keep your fascist president in power is not one, because the way you went about it, rioting, is you're trying to keep him in power as a fascist, not as a president.
Well, yeah. And I think, in all honesty, there were literally, if you watch some of the news coverage, there were people who were going to go there and object to the votes, saying that there was massive fraud. And literally, because of the protests, one senator from, I believe, Georgia came up and said, I planned on coming up here and objecting the election results. However, I can no longer do that in good conscience. And I think because of their actions, because of them storming the Capitol, they cost Donald Trump any chance he had of staying in. Now, albeit his chances were slim, right? And Donald Trump was not helping this. And I think no matter what, Donald Trump has been our president for the past 4 years. You've got to show him a certain amount of respect. Because of that. However, I think at this point in time, he has lost the right to all of that respect for the simple fact he was kind of agging people on to do this. It wasn't necessarily he said, go and do this, but he was definitely telling them, I will support you doing this.
See, my biggest issue I had with what he did was he in one breath told them to go home, and in the next told them to march up Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yep.
So the problem is, okay, I believe in personal responsibility. I believe each and every one of those people who breached the Capitol building, who were not supposed to do there, caused any damage, did any harm, you know, I believe that they should be charged. I also believe that if we're going to do that with this situation, that we need to go back to every riot that's happened recently and do the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, so whether that disagree. Be Kenosha, Wisconsin, whether that be Minneapolis, Minnesota, whether that be, you know, anywhere.
Seattle, where Seattle, they had the autonomous zone.
The Chaz Chop. That's the thing is I am one of those people who, if you're violent, you need to be taken and held accountable for what you're doing.
Yeah.
Whether you're on the left or the right, I don't care.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Well, I think so. Here's the thing. I am all about human rights, and I will say this. I like what Black Lives Matter stands for. However, at times, I'm all for the protests. I'm all for my brothers and sisters who are Black should not have to worry about if they are, when they're driving home, are they going to be pulled over and accused of having stuff in the back of their car? I think of one story my son's godfather told me was that he was driving home. He got pulled over and he got searched just because he was Black. That was all the grounds they had to search him, but they searched his car, they searched him. And he's sitting there thinking, am I going to jail? What did I do wrong? Like he was just in the wrong part of town at the wrong time. And that was it. With that said, I'm all for let's make them equal rights. But when it comes to stuff like the riots, I think people have to be held accountable for their actions. With the Capitol thing, with Black Lives Matters, with all that, if you are turning a peaceful protest into a riot, you need to be held accountable.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, you know, there's so many reasons that, especially me being, you know, the very minimal government libertarian that I am, I do think that there are so many reasons within the last 200 years of our country that we could have stormed that Capitol and had every right as a citizenry. However, this is not one. And because Trump told you to, and he's your president, and Biden's not your president. No, that there's no reason for this. Come on, people.
So I think I just want to say two things, and I think I'm done with this because I don't know if I can talk about this much more because this gets my blood flowing, man. There are two things. One, my heart breaks for the lady who lost her life in this, right? I don't think she deserved to lose her life. If you're storming the Capitol, you do deserve to be held accountable, but I don't think it means you have to pay with your life.
Correct.
The second thing is, this just proves exactly what we've been talking about since day one of this podcast. Our two-party government system does not work, period. Yep. This is not a conservative liberal thing. This is not even just left wing, right wing, right? This is not, I think this person deserves rights and this person, or I believe, let me rephrase that, I'm sorry. I believe immigration is good, immigration is bad, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on. Doesn't matter. This is a flat out a Republican and a Democratic thing.
Period. Yes.
And while some of the Republicans were saying we condemn this, we don't agree with this, and that's great. That's not okay. What your real action should be and what you really should be doing is saying, look, clearly our country cannot handle a two-party system. We need to abolish this, get rid of the system, fix it so this doesn't happen again. So it's not just Republicans versus Democrats. It is we are standing up for these single issues. We are talking about these issues and not just down a party line.
Yes, I completely agree with that. So one thing, I have a quote here that I'm going to read. It was a Facebook page, and I posted it on my Facebook, so I don't know, you might have seen it. But the Libertarian vice president candidate, Spike Cohen, he also has a podcast, Muddied Waters of Freedom, which is a great one to listen to if you're looking for a libertarian podcast. But the thing is he put it this way, and I really liked the way he put it because he broke it down to just what you're talking about, that it's not, you know, black versus white, and it's not that, it's, you know, it's our government that's causing a lot of this. And this is what he said. The reason for the protests and riots that are happening right now is for reasons that are way more similar to why the Black Lives Matter protests and riots happened than either side is willing to admit. At the core of these riots, at the core of why they voted for Trump in the first place, is frustration and fear over what they see around them. Lost jobs, low wages, and the cost of living skyrocketing out of control.
Yeah.
Simply put, people who are happy and comfortable don't riot. The problem is that they're misplacing their anger and rage. They're currently rioting on behalf of someone who helped put them in the mess that they're in. This isn't about left versus right, Republican versus Democrat, white versus black. It's about the people versus a relative handful of incredibly powerful politicians and cronies, including Trump and Biden, who rob us every day. They rob us of our money. They rob us of our opportunities, of our livelihoods, of our futures. As we've seen many times, sometimes they rob us of our lives. Their actions fill us with rage, and they redirect our rage towards each other. Remember the 2000s when Occupy, an anti-big business, and the Tea Party, an anti-big government, were fighting each other while big government handed trillions of dollars to big businesses, created relations to turn them into monopolies, and laughed at the rest of us. That's happening right now. We just got another stimulus bill where we got 600 and crony corporations and big government agents got trillions, and we got stuck with the bill with it with interest. And then he continues on from there. I'm not going to read the rest of it, but he brings it down to the point that, you know, we have to realize and recognize that the Republicans and the Democrat are all like together and working in our government, and that we need to, as a citizenry, stand up for ourselves and show these, because the problem is it's not the people that are split. It's the extremists on each side that are polarizing our country, and those extremists are the Republicans and the Democrats in charge.
No, I agree 100%. And I think what's really interesting is, honestly, with all the stuff that's going on, I think it's really interesting to see Joe Biden going in. I'm not a Biden fan. We've talked about that. I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for Trump. But what I will say is that I think, in all honesty, with Biden being where he is in the political sphere, which is more of a centrist dip for a Democrat anyway.
Right.
He's more middle left, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think, in all reality, outside of the fact that I don't think any Republican or Democrat is the right person to handle this right now, of all those people, I think he might be the only person who could handle something like this. I mean, other than Obama, and hopefully mm-hmm. he just brings Obama in to like be his like ear, like, you know, to be the guy whispering in his ear and saying, Joe, say this.
Oh, that was a perfect, that was good. Yeah, you know, that's the thing is, you know, if he can just use the people around him, and
for sure,
my biggest fear is the vice president. You know, yeah. Her policies and her politics and she rubs me the wrong way. I don't care for her at all. I just, you know, they're so out there, and I just can't. That's where it worries me.
Yeah, well, I think, and this is where I think Joe Biden maybe got a little wrong. I think he chose her because she's a black woman. Yes. I don't think he chose her because of her politics. Right. I think if Joe Biden was going to choose someone more for their politics, we'd see a more centrist Democrat mm-hmm. than we would Kamala Harris. And yeah. It's nothing against her. I don't know her personally. Haven't done a lot of research into her stances. I know from everything I have read, she's very, very far left. She's about as far left as you go without being Bernie Sanders.
Or AOC.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, but anyway.
That's the thing is, you know, that's, and especially now with our Senate being split 50-50.
Yeah.
She's the tying vote because right. we did have the Georgia runoff and both of the Democrats won in that.
Yep.
But you know, honestly, that could be good because yeah. Mitch McConnell's not up there. I don't like Mitch McConnell either. You know, that's the thing I think Turtle Man needs to go away because he just sits up there and he sits there with his hard shell and won't let anything come across.
Yeah, like, well, I think that's one thing too. If it's not Republican for Mitch McConnell, it's not coming across. And I think that's an issue as well. And it might be good. I mean, the thing is, what I can say is most likely we'll probably end up with at least another stimulus, you know, the 2000 promised or whatever stimulus, if not another one. But we'll see. Because I honestly think we'll probably be talking about another stimulus bill down the line, because I think Joe Biden will want to have his own stimulus bill that's not an era of the Trump administration.
Yep.
I don't know. We'll see. But with all that said, that whole thing, I don't know. There's a lot more we can say about that. It's just sad.
Yeah. And my whole thing is I believe that we need the freedom of speech. I believe, you know, mm-hmm. in our rights that as natural born, you know, human beings, I believe that we have these rights. And the thing is we should be able to stand up and say what we believe and protest. However, I also don't think that these people should be violent in the same manners they were violent in. That's where I draw the line. The second you turn things violent, that's where I draw the line.
100% agree. Well, let's move on to the Florida man moment so we can brighten our day. So
definitely
on to Florida. So this one made me laugh really hard. There's a Florida man in Tallahassee. You read that, didn't you?
Yes.
He lit off a fire extinguisher because he was trying to dry himself. So what ended up, what he told the police is that he had been drinking. He fell asleep in water when he woke up. And so he decided that he would grab the fire extinguisher and shoot it off and try and dry himself with that. Now, I'm sure he had to still be drunk, right? Like, there's no way that he wasn't drunk when he did this.
My only question is, it says that this is a facing a third charge of
felony. Yeah.
How
is 5 years in prison?
I mean,
like, that's insane.
I mean, being the redneck that I am, I mean, so you're telling me that if I took a fire extinguisher out and went pew, pew, pew at it, and it might have go boom.
It went boom, boom, boom.
That, you know, I could be punishable by a third degree felony?
Well, so I think, in all honesty, I think it's probably because it was in a place where, because this is... He was on the, it looks like he was on the campus of Florida State University.
He was on the campus.
So he was in a campus. He was probably in a place, he probably was in a place he shouldn't have been. He was using a fire extinguisher that was probably there, like in a parking garage. Like, you wouldn't think that many fires happen in there, but when they do, you need that fast, right?
Right.
Do I think he deserves to spend 5 years in jail? No, make him pay for the fire extinguisher. If it wasn't used all the way, put the pin back in, I don't know if they can be reused after they're, but make him pay for the fire extinguisher, make him spend the night in the drunk tank, make fun of him, make, you know, put him on a Florida. Like,
man,
5 years in jail for that seems a little overboard, but essentially what I can say is what I learned from this is, don't fall asleep in water if you're drunk, because you will try and dry yourself off the fire.
Oh man, that's whew. Yeah. I mean, just looking at the picture of the gentleman, he looks like his glasses were glassy when they took this picture. He was probably still pretty drunk when they took his mugshot here.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And he looks like a kind of person who may not comprehend that this isn't going to work.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But Anyway.
Yeah. Well, are you ready for some conspiracy corner over here?
I would love to hear some conspiracy, Nick.
You know, so this is actually, this article that I found is actually from CNN. And they are talking... in this last COVID-19 relief spending bill, the U.S. intelligence agencies have 180 days to share what they know about the UFOs. Thanks. And that's directly in the COVID spending bill that they just passed.
What?
Yes, sir. So in this $2.3 trillion coronavirus relief that President Donald Trump signed, it began the 180-day countdown for the U.S. intelligence agencies to tell Congress what they know about UFOs. The Director of National Intelligence and the Security of Defense have a little less than 6 months to now provide the Congressional Intelligence and Armed Service Committees with an unclassified report about unidentified aerial phenomenon. It's a stipulation that was tucked into the committee comment section of the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021, which was contained in the massive spending bill. So this just proves to me that all of my alien theories are coming to fruition, that aliens are real and our government knows about it. Oh man. Aliens leaving pastor speechless again.
In the COVID relief bill?
Yes.
Who was sitting in Congress going, hey, you know what would be really good? Let's give all the American people $600, or let's give a majority of the American people $600. Let's give lots of companies money. Oh, and we need to know about aliens.
Yep. Part of this article says that the Pentagon released three short videos in April of last year showing unidentified aerial phenomenon clips that the U.S. Navy had previously confirmed were real. The videos, one from 2004 and the other from 2015, show what appears to be unidentified flying objects rapidly moving while recorded by infrared cameras. Two of the videos contain service members reacting in awe of how quickly the objects are moving. One voice speculates that it could be a drone. It's still unclear that what the objects were, and there's no consensus on their origins. Some believe it may be drones potentially operated by earthly adversaries seeking to gather intelligence rather than their extraterrestrials we normally equate with UFOs. However, I'm calling bogusness. I think it's aliens.
So the thing is I will tell you this before you get your hopes up there, redneck. Just because they're telling Congress doesn't mean Congress is going to tell you.
I mean, that's true. But still, it just proves to me that because they have to tell Congress that they're there. They're real aliens.
Oh. You know, I am going to... to quote Marvin the Martian, take me to your leader. I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's like I said.
I will say one of my like all time like wants is to go to Area 51, even just to see it. I don't know necessarily that I believe that aliens are here. I just think Area 51 is like this cool speculated, like, ooh, might be aliens. And I'm sure around there they have like lots of museums and alien things. And I would love to see it. I don't believe that in them. Well, not necessarily. I believe that if God wanted to make aliens, he could have made aliens. But or aliens to us anyway. If we go to their planets, then we're the aliens. So, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, it's, I saw that and I was like, oh man, I've been on a Bigfoot rant lately. We got to get some more aliens in here. You know, I mean, Bigfoot could be an alien. I did talk about that Bigfoot might be an interdimensional hopping beast. Yeah. So he could be an alien. So maybe this is Bigfoot's craft. You know, oh man.
So, moving right on to saving humanity after that, I don't know. That was a terrible segue. I don't even know, man. I got nothing. So, I'm seriously moving on to our saving humanity moment.
It needs a little saving from the redneck right now.
Yeah. So, in Atlanta, a homeless gentleman ran into a burning building to save the lives of 10 cats and 6 dogs. It was an animal rescue program for at-risk youth. What it looks like is it was a nonprofit, and these dogs and cats were shelter dogs. There's nonprofit shelter, and they would take in this article they even talk about like they would take his dog when he couldn't get food and stuff, and this homeless man ran into the building to save the lives of these cats and dogs, which is really awesome. He saved all of them. They're all okay, and this gentleman is okay too. It sounds like this gentleman, if this gentleman hadn't been there, all these animals and defenseless creatures would have lost their lives. And just, it's so cool to see someone risk their lives for someone who's defenseless, for something that's defenseless. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman is a hero in my book, and it may not be legitimately saving humanity by saving these pets, but you are definitely the recipient of Saving Humanity This Week award, if we had one.
Definitely. So. You know, the thing is, you know, it might not be saving a human life, but sometimes pets help humans to get through their hard times and their stresses and whatever is going on. And, you know, these shelter lives deserved to be saved, you know, even though they might not be in a home right now, who knows whose life they're not going to make better when they finally do get their home.
Yeah, and what makes it even more awesome is that the gentleman who saved it was a homeless gentleman. And, you know, his name was Keith Walker. So, Keith Walker, if you can hear us, you're an awesome dude. The world needs more people like you. And keep it up. And I hope from this story, because this has gotten like national attention, I hope from the story that some people have stepped up to help him. They kind of mentioned that this gentleman has been homeless for a long time. And I hope that through this story, maybe he got some help as well. So.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's the thing is, you know, in these situations, people can see the true heart of the person and what's going on. And, you know, hopefully people were able to take their hearts and whatever, you know, funds they might have and reach out and help this man up, even though, you know, he's down on his luck. He was still willing to run in and save his and risk his life to save these animals' lives.
Yeah. And that's an amazing thing in my book. But well, with that, we've been talking at you for a while. We would like to thank everyone for listening. If you disagree with any of our opinions or have anything you'd like us to add or talk about, reach out to us at redneckpastorpodcast@gmail.com. And I think that's all I got. You got anything, any last words there, Redneck?
Not a whole lot. Just go ahead and hit subscribe on whatever platform you're using. I know we're out there on 6 different platforms, Spotify, and I know we're on Anchor, is hosting us there, and Google Podcasts and all of those. And just hit like and subscribe and share us with your friends and family if you think they would like to listen to the pastor and I just talk about what's going on in current events, news, and you know, we also have our, if you go to our page there on Anchor, it will also take you to our Facebook page, and go ahead and give us a like over there, and we'll get some of that updated and whatnot. And just that everybody have a good week and a, you know, a happy new year here, and everybody had a Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to us, and good night, guys.
Good night.